Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Daniel Karupkin, who is a Rav of a shul, a small little shul in Toronto called the Bayit, the most gigantic shul I think I've ever seen in my life, and an old friend of the Orthodox Union. Rabbi Karupkin, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Steve. Thank you. And it's always good to reconnect with my old boss.
I was never your boss, Rabbi Karupkin. You know, I was just a lay leader. That's all I was, a lay leader trying to help out Klal Yisrael.
Well, you served tremendously and admirably during your time there at the OU, and we remember it fondly. It was a tremendous time for the OU.
Yeah, thank God. I feel the same way. Anyway, listen, we're going to talk a little bit about an article that you wrote for the Jewish Action, which is, of course, one of the pearls of the OU, among many, and it really had to do with politics and the pulpit. Should rabbis discuss politics in shul? So I know the answer to the question, because I kind of am reading the article, but why do you think rabbis should discuss politics in shul?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, like, very briefly what I said in the article. I feel that for most congregants that are out there, and of course it really depends on the type of shul you daven at. Every shul is different, every rav is different. But for the average balabas who's davening at an OU shul, I think that they're looking for something that is very relatable to their lives, something that they're talking about at the Shabbos table, and they want the rav to put it into a Torah context. We've gone through those iterations in Jewish history where we stay exclusively within the ghetto walls, and therefore the purview of Torah is relegated to halachic discussions and issues of ethics and morality, not connected to the rest of the world. But we are so much a part of the political process, and we have an obligation to be a part of that political process, that the Rav has to put it into a Torah context, too.
Okay, and I read the article, and I just thought it was interesting that you were talking about, so you say, a Judaism that limits itself to halachic issues like Shabbat, or kashrus, where, you know, a fleshik spoon in a milchik pot, you know, doesn't sound all that enticing. But when you think about it, I mean, the vehicle that the Rav has to connect to most of his balabatim, unfortunately, is that Jerusha on Shabbos morning where the most amount of people come. And so shouldn't that time really be used to, you know, Torah values of honesty, ethics, Shabbos? You know, I'm not talking about the minute little details, but shouldn't that really what the Jerusha should be about?
I think that ultimately you're able to, an effective darshan is able to weave in those elements into everything that he says. I mean, you look at any parsha in the Torah, it's impossible to exclusively talk about politics in a drasha. It always has to come down to the fact that we as the Jewish people have a higher responsibility. We have a calling, and part of that calling, of course, is Torah and mitzvahs. And so there's always got to be an ethical lesson to the congregation. But woven and interspersed into that ethical message and halachic imperative has to be knowing how to engage with the rest of the world, which is going to inevitably involve politics.
So, in other words, it's really not the essence of the drasha, but it's a part of the drasha.
Well, I think it depends on the week. You know, first of all, a rav who speaks, you know, the major thrust of his speech, if it's going to be politics every Shabbos, then eventually the congregation will get tired of that. If the essence of his speech every week is Musar, then the Kehillah will get tired of that. If the essence every week is Halacha, then we'll get tired of that. You know, I've always said, I mean, you grew up with the Ed Sullivan Show, right?
I mean,
in a sense, the rabbi's pulpit has to be a little bit of a variety show. You've got to mix it up a little bit. Every Shabbos should be something different. If the congregation comes to shul already predicting what the rav is going to talk about in the essence of his drasha, then I don't think that's a sign of success. I think that the congregation should be coming every Shabbos and be curious. I wonder what the rav's going to talk about today, or I wonder how he's going to tie in an important issue into the parsha today.
Uh-huh. That's a good point. How much time does it take you, by the way, I'm getting off topic, but how much time does it take you to prepare a Shabbos morning drasha?
Well, I mean, it depends. Sometimes I'm on game and sometimes I'm way off game, you know, and also there are times when I think drushas write themselves. based on the events of, that have happened over the course of the week, whether it's in Israel or whether it's domestically. And a lot of times the message is so self-evident, it's just the question of how to create the proper verbiage and the inspiring presentation. And then there are other times, just like any person who's a writer, he gets writer's block, and you have to sort of sit and really, really pour over a whole bunch of different svarim until something really hits you and says, "Wow, this is gonna grab them."
You think there are rabbis who feel that you shouldn't talk about politics at all, or, I mean, the way you know you're describing it, why not? I mean, it just makes sense, because shouldn't the rabbi of the shul relate the Parshas HaShavua or something to what's going on in today's world, which is what makes every parsha so unique and so wonderful? Because Matos Masai, you know, which we're going to be laning this Shabbos, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, I mean, it's different in 2016 than it was in 2015.
Oh, of course. I mean, the whole message of that Moshe Rabbeinu tells B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, how can you stay back when the rest of your brethren are going to go in and fight in Eretz Yisrael? It's such a contemporary message, which has been used in so many ways by so many different factions. You know, look, that's why I started by saying that for people who go to an OU shul, there are so many different kinds of Orthodox minyanim. And a lot of times, let's say your shul may have a hashkama minyan. And at the hashkama minyan, there's no drasha, but at the end of the hashkama minyan, someone will give a halacha shir. And we have minyanim like that at the bayit also. I think that those are great for those who are seeking that halachic knowledge. And perhaps there are people who only have a half an hour a week to be able to sit down. And for them, they want to review halacha. But I think that they're missing out, because when we don't connect what's going on all around us in the world to the Torah, then that in itself is living life, in a sense, without clarity, without proper vision. Everything that's happening around us in the world today is part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. And I think part of the rabbi's responsibility is to focus everyone's attention to the miraculous events that are really unfolding. Even the election today, I mean, the two candidates who are so unpopular in public opinion, neither of them has really any significant rating of popularity. And that also, we're seeing history unfold before us. And I get excited about it, because I want my congregants to be excited about it too and realize we're living through Hashem's history.
Yeah, well, I think you make a very good point also in the article about never taking sides, because then I think if a Rav starts to really take sides, he may alienate some parts of the congregation, which is really not what the rabbi should be doing.
Absolutely, especially because the rabbi is involved in so many vulnerable points in people's lives, life cycles, especially when tragedy strikes the family. You don't want the family to feel estranged from the Rav because of politics. The Rav has to be the person they can go to and say anything to, and that they feel safe going to. So the Rav should not be a strong Farbrenta Republican or a strong Farbrenta Democrat. He's got to be open, and he's got to let people decide on their own.
And in the article, you talk a little bit about, and once again, I think a different time in 1812 when you talk about the French invasion of Russia. I mean, you know, that's an incredible time period where literally it's pikuach nefesh. That's what you're dealing with. And so for the fact that one Rav, you know, takes one position and someone else takes another position. And in a way, I can understand that, because you're dealing with Hatzolus Nefashos, you're dealing with many things. Today in politics, it's true, candidates are different. But, I mean, the world's not going to end either way if either one of these candidates, I'm talking about the United States, but in most times, maybe in some elections it is. Maybe in some elections it is so important. But, generally speaking, the world's not going to end because of one person getting elected or the other. There's still a judicial system, an executive system, a legislative system, and so on and so forth.
Well, I think you're hitting on a very important point, which I don't address in the article, and that is so much of the problem that we have today about the polarization of opinions in America today has to do with the lack of civility. I mean, you just said that no matter who gets elected, whether it's Trump or Hillary, the country will continue, life will go on, it's not going to bring the apocalypse. Well, if you go on social media today and you read what some people are talking about, or even if you go on blogs or read the articles and even in the major media, you would think that this election is going to mean either the continuation of the American experiment or the death knell of modern democracy as we know it. And people speak in such hyperbole today, which is why we're seeing such violence in society today. We're seeing people so polarized, not realizing that, hey, guys, you got to chill out. If everyone thought like you, Steve, that, you know what, it's another election. It's either going to be Hillary or Trump, but business will commence as usual. There may be more emphases in one area over another area, but we're still going to be in America. And America is going to still stand by its founding fathers' principles and vision, and life will be okay. And we have to really have bitachon in Hashem, that he knows what he's doing. Then I think everyone would be able to get along a lot much better. There'd be a lot more shalom bias, in not only in the Jewish people, but in America in general.
No, I agree with you. And that's why sometimes when I travel to a third world country or some other places, and there the election is so important because literally it will change society completely. And now maybe in those situations, if you're a Rav of a shul, I could see a Rav of a shul taking a position because it is so crucial. But, you know, here I'm saying in America, I mean, I know you're in Canada now, but the point is it's a democracy. Things will change, but also, what about the fact that every single day in our davening we say Al tiftachu b'nedivim? Okay, you got to put your faith in the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's a great political speech to me. I'd love to hear a Rav talk about that, to say let's take it easy. You know, let's look at the issues, but you know, let's understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu still runs the world.
You know, I remember when Stephen Harper lost the last election here in Canada.
Sure.
And there were people who were saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't say the Tefillah Lishlom HaMedina for Canada because now we have Trudeau and we don't know if he's going to be so pro-Israel. And I looked at these people and I said, what are you talking about? Of course we should pray for our leaders. First of all, Trudeau has a mixed record on his stance in Israel. He's done a lot of really good things for Israel, even though he may not be as pro-Israel as overtly as Harper is, but he still believes in democracy. He still believes in Israel being the only democracy in the Middle East, and he's very, very helpful. But more than that, what do we say in the Tefillah Lishlom HaMedina? We are asking God to provide wisdom to our leaders. So it's especially if you think that your leader doesn't possess wisdom, that's when you should be davening with even more kavana.
Right, and that's why I think in the article you make a very good point also, and you talk about, you say, a good rabbi respects his congregants' independent ability to think critically and come up with their own conclusions after weighing all the factors, be they religious or secular. And that I think is an important message for a rabbi to talk about. The fact that you can be in one shul together with somebody sitting in the same row and you don't have to agree on everything, but yet at the same time, you can still be friends with somebody. And I think what's happening in society that I see is that we've become so polarized in everything that we do that you can't anymore just even be friends with somebody who has a different opinion than you. And I think it's a terrible thing when you want to talk about Achdus and Shalom. I think it's hurting us in the Jewish community.
Unfortunately, I agree. And, you know, there are certain Rabbanim who feel passionately about political issues that are going on, whether internally in the Jewish community or whether externally. And I'm actually guilty of it as well. Sometimes I've spoken, and I think in retrospect, I look at it and I've been overly passionate about an issue that divides Jews. And I realize that's not what my pulpit is for. My pulpit is for unifying people and for allowing people to think critically about the important issues, not telling them what to think, but at the same time encouraging them to think for themselves, and to remind them at the end of the day that the most important thing for Klal Yisrael is unity. I think that was one of the things that emerged a couple of summers ago when our three boys tragically were murdered. There was so much disunity up until that moment, and then that was a turning point where we all realized, you know what? We got to stop this nonsense. We got to stop the fight, the infighting, and let's just come together. And I hope that message continues to resonate.
Yeah, no, I think it does resonate. You know, and I think one of the things also that I found, and maybe you could comment on this, because I was mentioning, I'm just telling the listening audience that I mentioned the Rabbi Karapkin before we started, that I'm a big fan of Rabbi Karapkin's. I've always been, of course, but now I have a chance to listen to him on OU Torah and so on. And I think sometimes rabbis forget that when they're giving a shiur in their local community, that it might be listened to by hundreds or thousands of people in different parts of the world who may not have the same exact opinion as you.
Right? No, it's very,
do you
true.
Think about, do you think about that a lot when you're giving your shiur today?
I don't think about it. It depends on the shiur. First of all, when I give a drasha to my kehillah, I know that there are always visitors from out of town. And I've actually had someone come over to me and say, well, maybe you shouldn't have talked about that issue because there were visitors from out of town for a simcha. But my response to them is, my drasha Shabbos morning is first and foremost to address an issue that I feel is vital for my kehillah to hear, whether it's having to do with someone who's suffering in the community, whether there's something that we're not doing properly in the community that needs to be addressed, or whether it's just to give a pep talk to the to a certain element within our community that needs to be addressed. The Shabbos morning drasha, if it's going to get out there, it's going to get out there. But I still have to say what I have to say to my kehillah, that I owe it to them. When it comes to something that's published, that's going to go beyond the walls of my shul, then I do have to be much more careful. Absolutely.
No, absolutely, no question. Well, listen, Avraham Krafman, we can go on and on and on, but I'm so glad that we had a chance to discuss this a little bit, and I'm sure when people read the article, they're going to be encouraged to listen to the interview and kind of take it. Like we've become the Rashi of the article, you see? That's what we've become. So that's what
well,
this article.
Thank you. Anyways, I love what you're doing, Steve. Keep up all the great stuff
thank
that
you.
You're doing.
Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you soon. Bye-bye. Be well. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.